This week we have Melissa Dickman joining us for a conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today, Melissa.
Thank you.
So Melissa has been exploring her own path of spirit and its intersections with life, and specifically doing it in the Southwest for some years now. In her day job, she works with Arizona State University in theater and drama, and then in the evenings, she lives this peculiar life focused on permaculture projects, immigration reform, meditation, and spiritual pursuits. And most recently, that has involved some very deep introspection in addition to creating spaces for others to do the same. I would say that personally, I feel very grateful and honored to play the role of interviewer today, not only because I've had the pleasure of knowing Melissa myself for years, but that we both share a common background, being both from the Phoenix area, and I feel so grateful that she's here to represent. Melissa, we're going to start broad and start working a little bit more specific.
Okay.
So I'd love to hear you share a little bit more about your interest in activism broadly. Where did that come from?
Well, I like to joke that my activism was time released. Because when I went to Loyola Chicago for my undergraduate degree, and my roommate and many of my friends were heavily involved in activism. And but I was so involved in the theater that I was always just in the theater, and they were the ones who were sleeping with homeless people on the street or protesting
Wow.
the then Iraq war that was getting started. So I was always around a group of people with a deep sense of activism, and I agreed with them, but I was like, I have to go stage manage a play right now. So it was kind of an indirect, like we used to joke with my old roommate about the FBI file she must have, so the one I must have by extension of living with her. And then I moved to the Southwest in 2008 for graduate school, and my very first class was not held in a classroom, but was held at the Masawali Work Center in Northern Phoenix, which is a worker center for day laborers to hopefully get picked up for jobs safely versus like at a Home Depot or a Lowe's. And that was where my very first classroom experience grad school was meeting day laborers and hearing their stories and seeing what their life was here in the Southwest. And that kind of catapulted me head over heels into what was going on here in the desert. And so like I joke with my advisor, I'm like, this is your fault. You took me to that first class, and I spent a full semester. We would go once a week or every couple weeks, and just sitting with mostly men who, at that time, the economic recession had just hit. So these are folks who had gone from making $20 or $30 an hour to maybe not getting work for weeks at a time. I remember one person really struck me at the center. He said he was 18, but we all knew he was actually underage. His father had died, and he was supporting his mother and seven or eight other siblings. And he was here in this country by himself and trying to earn enough money so that his family would be okay. And I just remember sitting there and being like, I can't imagine if I was 16 or 17 years old having to go thousands of miles to a place where I don't speak the language and where I don't know anyone to try and support my family. And so I don't know many people who can't be moved by that. I mean, when you're sitting across the table and looking at someone in their eyes and they're telling you their story, that for me was that there was something happening here and that I had to do something. I had to be involved. And so being passive stopped being an option at that point. Mm.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like when I think about social justice causes more broadly, it's quite a generic term, and it can be mm-hmm. applied to topic areas that seem to be universal in nature. And yet when I hear you talk about specific geographic-oriented types of concerns around day laborers, around border districts, this sounds like it's very location specific. To what extent are you connected with projects that are very germane to issues that are related to that part of the world?
Well, I spent several years here, especially as with Arizona. They passed a law in 2010 called SB 1070, which was a law that attempted to basically turn everyone in our community into an immigration officer. It would have meant if it had gone into effect in full, if the full law had gone into effect, it would have meant that before someone could get into my car, I would have to ask them what their status was, because if I allowed someone in my car or in my home who was undocumented, I could be actually charged with a misdemeanor then. So they attempted to really criminalize like who you talk to and who you share your community with. And so I was very locally involved with a number of groups in what we might think of as more traditional activism, the protests, the marches, the sit-ins, on the day SB 1070 went into law, well over 100 people were arrested. So I got involved with those very local things, but always had on my mind the big picture of, I used to live in Italy, and when I was living in Italy, the same issues of border and of migrants were coming up there. In Italy, it's mostly migrants from either India or Asia or Africa, and they are facing some of the same racism, xenophobia, and othering that's happening here in the American Southwest is also happening in Italy. It's also happening in Australia with Asian immigrants. And so I think it's something that it's very easy to see that these are rooted local situations, but there's a global issue happening of how we're defining ourselves as community and how we decide that, like, okay, the people here on this side of the table are with me and those people on the other side of the table are not, and so they're other. And so for me, part of the question is how do we create a community? How do we create a sense of place that doesn't allow us to start saying, like, well, we're in and you're not? Because that begins the dehumanization process that allows us to really hurt one another. I practice Kundalini yoga, and the first sutra of the Aquarian Age, they say, is recognize that the other person is you. I think that's a really important thing at this time is, especially when you hear folks who are like, well, the person crossed the border and the person da-da-da, and it's like, but that person is you. So now how do you want to treat yourself?
I'm reminded of the timeless phrase, think globally, act locally.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear you articulate these local issues, they're clearly not local. And what you're alluding to is this way of looking at the world that is a real shift. And I was wondering if you could dive a little bit deeper into that, because what you're talking about to me is starting to veer away from traditional quote-unquote activism. What are your thoughts on the difference between that, traditional activism and more spiritually based approaches?
Well, I definitely feel like the first two or three years of activism in my life here, Brené Brown calls it the spiritual breakdown, breakthrough, and I've totally had one of those that I'm still working through. And I think part of it is this idea of I'm an academic. I study nonviolent direct action. Like, that's my scholarship. Those are, like, how do we do it? What are the tactics? What's the science behind these protests and these sit-ins? But there's an energy behind it that I sometimes think is really lacking. We sometimes, it's just like doing yoga. You can move into the posture, but are you connecting to your soul? Are you connecting your mind, your body, and your spirit at the same time? Or are you just, in downward facing dog? I think the same thing happens on the street. Are you holding a sign and protesting and angry? Or are you holding yourself in a way that you are trying to the best of your ability to love everyone who's around you, whether they're on your side or not? Are you trying to hold the space of being brighter and being a light to your community? Are you trying to know your neighbors? I mean, it's also really easy to go do a march and then go home and not say hi to your next door neighbor, or not look the homeless person in the eyes on your way to the light rail. And so I think for me, I started seeing that, you know, these big actions, they have a place. They have a role, but they don't do the little everyday things that actually I feel like change me and change myself so that I can function differently in this world and have a larger impact. So I think that for me, it's getting to this root. It's like, it really is, you know, as Service Space likes to say, you know, change yourself to change the world. It started really becoming a place for me that I was like, I have to shift myself in this space in order to be the most capable person at social activism, at making a bigger change.
So let's talk about that, that personal side of the coin. Tell me about the Batcave. What is that?
So the Batcave was something I just finished about a 6-month intensive of yoga and meditation. And it was a process that I agreed to do. It was a teacher training, but the way they set it up is it's very much like an individual process to go deep within yourself over several months. And I have been dealing with a lot of anxiety and fear that came out of a lot of my activism. You know, when you start seeing the other side of human nature and the frustration of it's not going anywhere, and I think the frustration of knowing that you can change, and knowing that I could change myself, but not knowing how, not having a process, starting to become aware of things, but then being afraid of what I was becoming aware of. And so I like to say that the fear and the anxiety and a lot of the negative emotions that come up, especially as you begin to see yourself, it's so easy to see a habit coming up. I mean, you talked about like being vulnerable about your habits. I have a lot of issues around feeling separated and isolation and abandonment, and that can make me suddenly like grab onto people and try to be around a person all the time and be like, you're my new best friend. Like, you're going to make me feel connected all the time. But no one person can do that. Like, we can only, like, connect ourselves to the infinite on our own. And so as those, it's so easy then to say, well, I'm not worthy. I'm not a good enough person. Or, like, well, I deserve these things once I get myself together enough. And so that dialogue and that place of searching for the worthiness and searching for the right to be happy, the right to be able to love and be loved, you know, that I go in, I like to say it's the Batcave because I feel like it's like watching all of your junk and all of your darkness kind of close in over yourself, and then you have to find the journey and walk out of it. And I feel like at the end of my teacher training, I've done that to a degree. Like, I've gotten out of the really big dark cave, at least for now, but it's been an interesting process to see how it comes back. And then the daily activity it takes of, like, making sure to do a practice, to get up and do yoga, to meditate, and to be able to then say, like, okay, now I know I have the tools and the technology to be able to sit with these emotions, to be able to sit with these feelings and get through them into something bigger than myself that's within me.
So, Melissa, I'm curious how the rubber hits the road there. That, you know, so some folks could hear that kind of a comment, and it sounds really deep, and it sounds also philosophical. And my sense is you don't mean it in that way. You mean it as very actionable and something that you bring into your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could share how it's come into your day-to-day life.
Yeah, I think it's something even in just like how do I interact with my colleagues and my friends and the people around me. I will sit and have a conversation, and, you know, sometimes I feel fear and anxiety coming up in myself, and I want to react. I feel the reaction coming, like maybe I'm having a fight with someone or a disagreement, and I want to get angry, and I am angry, and being angry is okay, because that's a perfectly honest human emotion. So then my question is to myself, I sit there and I go, well, I can get angry and I can scream right now and escalate the situation further in this moment, or I can take a deep breath, I can say, listen, friend, like, I'm feeling angry. I need a day to go sit with myself and release the anger part and get to the whatever is going on beyond the anger. I always like thinking of anger. I once had it referred to as like a fever, like when your body gets a fever when it needs to burn something out of you because it's not good for you. So we get angry when there's something happening that we need to clear from what's happening in ourselves. So that space of like saying to the person, okay, I need a day, like let me calm down. And having that space in relationships to be able to say, I need 10 minutes, or I need a day, or I need a week. And then coming back to that person in a much more constructive space of being able to say, okay, so I realized I was angry because I hadn't earlier communicated that, you know, what I need from this is, you know, I need us to look each other in the eyes and talk more. So when you were like on your cell phone or distracted, that made me angry. So now we know, like, how can we communicate better, fix this, and go forward. So I think it's little things like that, and just learning how to manage myself and shift, be more responsible for my own energy and for what I'm putting out in the world versus just allowing old habits and patterns and reactions to steer my direction.
I love your analogy with the fever. I think it's so apropos. So building off of that, I'm thinking about this connection between your personal micro and your personal macro. Have you thought about skillful ways to be able to bring that compassion-driven approach that you're practicing internally with all of these activist causes that you're working on in day-to-day life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thing that I keep asking myself about, because I stepped back from really heavy involvement in a lot of the movements and things because I felt so overwhelmed and because I was in a place of not, you know, a lot of activists burn out. You put so much energy out that you no longer can take care of yourself. And that absolutely happened to me. And I'm just recently starting to feel like I have the energy to take care of myself, that I'm starting to go, okay, now what projects do I pick back up? Like where do I now, with my feet back on the ground, where do I direct this energy and where is my energy best spent? And I find that that's the biggest shift for me, is changing where I want to put energy. I've always been interested in education, but I'm seeing so much more that, you know, it's one thing to go in the street and hold a sign, especially, like, I love the story Kunshan told about the positive signs, because so often when we protest, it's a negative thing. You know, it's like, stop this, don't do that, give me my rights. And versus a celebration and a space of positivity. And so now my question is how do we help? Like, for me, I see much more of my life changing a way of going, okay, how can I help people find a brighter space? How can I help people connect in to the positive space that helps us get through the negative that's in our lives, the oppression that's in our lives, that helps us be more centered and clear to face those things as we change them. So that's kind of, I don't know where it's going to manifest yet.
Well, and yet it sounds like you're already living that in many ways. The phrase that comes to my mind is enabling positive deviance. And if that's the frame with which you're sharing a way of behaving with people, what are the different ways that you've been exploring that? And one that comes to mind from our prior interactions is permaculture.
Yes. I love gardens. My favorite sign is the, like, who needs like instead of a therapist, like, grow a tomato plant, which is actually, I mean, that for me, as I got into gardening in graduate school, in part because I was completely stressed out by graduate school, and in part because I didn't have yoga or meditation yet, so I grabbed 40 tomato plants. and I think that the gardening, it's such a space. You see people change in it. You know, I created completely by accident a community garden in Tempe, and it was amazing because it was just a friend of mine had a backyard, and he knew I was gardening in pots, and so he invited me to take over about a third of his backyard. And I realized it was a bigger space than I could really handle gardening on my own, so I started inviting people over to his house. And the next thing you knew, on any given Sunday morning, we had anywhere between 3 and 10 people, sometimes more, and kids started coming with their parents, or in some cases, I had single friends who were single parents who would drop their kids off with us and then go do yoga or do something to take care of themselves.
Wow.
And, you know, like my friend Hans started planning, okay, you know, we're going to have kids this week. So he would go and make old treasure maps, and he would paint treasure boxes and order coins from around the world off of eBay, put them in the boxes, bury them, and then have the kids find them in the garden, you know, take 3 steps past the tomato plant, turn at the eggplant, and, oh, look, there's treasure. And it was such a space that for so many of the people that were coming with us every week, it may be the only time that they're really in community all week. It may have been the only time they were outside and not looking at a computer screen all week. And it was just this vibrant space of, look at how alive we become. Look at how easily we connect, not over, only just over growing things, but then, you know, during parts of the year, you don't have a whole lot of things you actually need to do in the garden. It's kind of maintaining itself fairly well. So we would just start cooking, and it was like, okay, what are we going to do with all this food we're growing? And so we would show up in the garden and just cook and grill outside and spend time together. And that community space said a lot to me about what happens when we connect to the plants, when we connect to the cycles. You can't garden and not know what the temperature is going to be. You know, I check the weather. I mean, I live in Arizona. The weather is sunshine, heat, and a monsoon every once in a while. But I'm constantly like, okay, well, what's the heat difference? Like, what's the soil temperature? I can tell you what the monsoons have done in the last 4 years. I have it memorized. And so these are just things, and it puts you into the cycle, I think, bigger than yourself, and putting you back into the cycle of what's happening with the earth and what's happening in your community and what's, you know, this Western life we've created is so screen heavy, and I feel like gardening helps you open your eyes back up as the lizard darts across the leaf and, oh, I have a lizard. Sweet. Like, it's going to go eat the bugs. This is awesome. I mean, it was like earlier this year, I was in my garden and I had to pull out, we let our yard go wild with the spring monsoons. So we have these massive wildflowers. But when they die, you have to pull them out or the city gets a little upset with you for your yard not looking appropriately suburban beautiful. So I was pulling out all of these dead wildflowers, and the next thing I feel something running over me, and I find that I'm literally covered in baby praying mantises. Just little tiny, like, thumbnail-sized baby praying mantises. Just running all over you, and I just had to sit down and laugh because I'm like, how often in your life do you get to sit there with like little baby ninjas? Because they jump and they move their little arms, and it's just, there's no better entertainment in my world.
Yeah, I hear two aspects coming through here. One is the importance of the subtle, paying attention to the small, and the other is this importance of developing family. And my sense is, you know, there's no charge for coming to to this community garden. And I'm wondering your thoughts on the role of community in your own journey.
You know, it's funny because my dad, I remember one time, was like, how did I raise like this liberal crazy daughter? And I always like to joke that like it's my parents' fault. Because I grew up in a family where my grandparents decided in the 1980s that they wanted to move to China and teach English. And when they weren't in China teaching English, they opened up their house. My grandfather built some bedrooms on the second floor. And so foreign students could live in their house pretty much for free as long as they helped take care of things. And so visiting my grandparents in Illinois was always a... you know, oh, who's going to be there? Usually folks from China, but sometimes Africa or other countries. And then my parents started opening up our house to exchange students, and I was raised with 12 different exchange students, so every year was like a new student from a new country. So to me, my community was very international and wasn't limited to the local from a very early age. And then I grew up in near Columbus, Ohio, in a small town. And we lived in a neighborhood that when I was a little kid, everybody was scared to visit me because we had some drug dealers and it wasn't the best neighborhood. But the neighbors came together and started changing it and started to, you know, put lights on the street and started to take care of things. And I grew up in a neighborhood where, like, our neighbor Walt would call us at, like, 5 p.m. and say, I decided to make lasagna. So he would make homemade lasagna for 60 people and call the entire neighborhood over to his house for dinner. Mm. And so we'd all show up at like 6:30 and have this big meal of lasagna because Walt felt like cooking that day. And different neighbors took turns at different holidays. Like there was one neighbor who always had a New Year's party. There was one neighbor who always had a St. Patrick's Day party. And the entire neighborhood would come to those houses and to those gardens and just spend time together. And we knew all of our neighbors. And so I grew up with a very different sense of childhood and with community than I think a lot of people have had in this country. And that's kind of always carried with me. It was when I first moved to Tempe in Arizona, I was the only person who knew, like, all of my neighbors in my apartment complex. Because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And I was like, of course I'm going to know all my neighbors.
Can I jump in there, Melissa, because mm-hmm. I feel like so you're touching on something that strikes me as a piece of the direction that I've been hearing from you more recently, mm-hmm. which is this mixture of community with introspection. And I know that you've recently started Awaken Circles in the Phoenix mm-hmm. area. Can you talk more about what Awaken is and its connection between or at a nexus of community and this compassion-driven approach?
So Awaken is a beautiful thing. It's a place for folks to come together and sit in silence for an hour. And then after an hour of silence, we read a reflection reading that's picked by the service space folks every week. And then after the reflection, we share a light vegetarian meal together. And it's been an interesting space for us. I started holding the space with my housemate, Richard, in October. And quite often for the first few months, like it might just be the two of us sitting. And recently in the last maybe like, since the beginning of the summer, we've had some days where it's been 8 or 10 people. And it's just such a completely different feeling of, I knew if we just held the space would do what it needed to do to serve the community and serve people. Some of my friends from yoga come on a fairly regular occasion. Sometimes we have a person who just comes once just to experience what silence is or what it is to sit. I had one friend come and she was like, you expect me to keep quiet for an hour? I remember one day a woman and a man actually were visiting from Mexico and they came to the sit and the wife sat for the full hour and I loved it because about halfway through her husband like started like reading a magazine and crunching a nut and it was so funny because he was just like, well, my wife said I had to be here, so I'm here. I'm keeping quiet, right? But I find it that it's such a great space for people to, you know, one of the things we say in Kundalini Yoga is that when you meditate or when you do yoga with a group of people, that it allows your energy and it allows your spirit to communicate on a subtle level, and so that it makes communication with words and language and after that meditation easier because you've allowed yourself to get to know one another on another level. And I think that really speaks to something of, like, taking the time and taking the space to sit and say, this is important to me, you are important to me. And, you know, so often we're so pressed and we're in such a hurry. So it's a big thing in this day of this time in our world to say, I'm going to sit with you for an hour and not say anything. I'm going to sit with you for an hour and just be here and allow my presence to work with you. And, I mean, how much of our world would change if we just slowed down and said, I'm going to be present with you? Because when we decide to be present, I think that opens up empathy. I think that opens up compassion. And I think that it for most people, I think it makes it harder to make the choices that hurt ourselves and hurt one another.
Melissa, when people think about these types of intentional communities that mm-hmm. operate from a deep space of compassion in the subtle, they don't necessarily think of Phoenix, Arizona.
It's not amazing. In the slightest.
It's amazing to hear this kind of approach in an area that is known for its political approaches of authoritarianism in many ways. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering why you choose to work in this area and build community where you are.
I ask that same question all the time, especially when it gets up to 119. I think for me, part of why I have remained here for this long is there is an active community trying to do something different here. It's easy to whitewash Arizona as the place with the crazy politicians and the crazy laws and the racism and the oppression. And we do have all of that here. But that's only one part of Arizona. I mean, one of my friends, Jason Odner, has done amazing things, and right now he's creating a free clinic that specifically helps serve folks without health insurance, folks who are afraid to go to a hospital or go to the doctor because of their because of whether they have papers or not. And he's been doing amazing work in alternative treatments as well, and really helping get healthcare professionals, like, to help serve those who really need it the most. And, like, they're doing amazing work. And so it's like you see these things, and this is a small enough community that, like, once you know one person in this community, you know them all. And so you know the projects and you know the work. And I think it's, I mean, sometimes it's frustrating because we're, like, local politics and local attitudes can weigh down. And sometimes I just want to be like, oh, it's too much, you know, this, it's not perfect. But where is perfect? And this is a place where you can practice and really, you have to stay on top of things here because it is so harsh in so many ways. It puts you, it pushes you and challenges you to really do the best you can and to go deeper, I think. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and so I constantly come back to this idea of, like, Jesus in the desert for 40 days. Or I went on a part of my yoga training, I went on this retreat, and the night before the retreat, I had a very intense meditation experience that the next morning I saw my teacher, and I said, Sevik, I was like, I feel like I was Israel in the Bible last night when he wrestles with God in the middle of the desert. I was like, I pretty much feel like I spent the whole night wrestling with God. I was like, so now I'm ready for this meditation retreat because I've already started it apparently. And so I feel like there's something in the desert to that. Like there's an energy and there's something in the spiritual world. It's like you go to the desert to learn these things about ourselves. And so I keep coming back to like, I keep thinking to myself like, am I going to have to stay in the desert for 40 years? Like, is there a 40 attached to this or do I get out earlier? But there definitely is something in this environment, I think, brings up in us.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing. And I know we're coming up on the top of the hour, so I'd like to turn it over to Kanchan.
Thank you, Birju. Thank you, Melissa. This has been wonderful. And maybe, Birju, you can ask another question while we wait for people to join the queue.
Sounds good. Melissa, before asking one more question, I just want to share gratitude for the space that you're holding in an area that is challenging on multiple regards. It feels invigorating and inspiring to hear that. And with that as a preface, for those that are on their own path of living into, call it heart-driven approaches, in places in themselves and places in community, where there hasn't been a manifestation of a group of people that share that viewpoint. Do you have words of guidance from your own experience on how that's manifested in your life?
Yeah, at one point when I was doing this work in 2010, I definitely felt on the spiritual side like I didn't have that part of the community here in Phoenix. And I was privileged enough to know Pancho and know so many of you from Service Space. And so I was lucky enough to have the resources to, I started traveling to Oakland about every 6 months to spend several days in meditation and service work with the Casa de Paz community and with folks doing work in Oakland. And that, for me, like I very much recognized that I was leaving Arizona in order to start grounding myself so that I could come back and do work here. And so that made it hard because I felt like that community was farther away. But I also knew that it was there and that I had friends that I could write letters to and call upon as I tried to do the work here. And then I also started opening myself up to saying, okay, I need to find this community here in Phoenix. And there's a very large yoga community here that, while they aren't involved in social activism necessarily in some of the ways I've been, they've kind of helped provide some of the spiritual support and sounding boards that I've needed to go into myself. And then that was part of why Awaken Phoenix started here, was I was like, okay, I need to build it. This community doesn't exist here, so how can I help build it and facilitate it? In part in a very like greedy way of like, okay, I want this community in Phoenix. Okay, so I'm going to start sitting once every 2 weeks and we're going to start seeing if we can't grow it. So I think that that's something of, you know, it's a petri dish, you know, put the petri dish out and see what grows. It might take, and it's about having patience for that to happen. You know, I knew when I started this in October that it wasn't like overnight we would have 20 people coming every week. But I was like, okay, I'm going to put out the effort and we're going to see what starts to happen. And I think that comes from gardening. Patience, and maybe that's what we can get you a plant, Virtue. Because you have to have patience for those things to grow. And I always find it amazing because there's the first part where, like, you plant the seed and, like, it's not coming up. And then it feels like you blink and you have zucchinis. And then suddenly your next thing is, I don't know what to do with all these zucchinis. But 3 months have gone by. So time moves and shifts in these different ways when we just kind of allow it to. So...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Since you mentioned Pancho, I was just thinking about it. I just wanted to express gratitude to you for, you know, I've met you a couple of times, and one, for beautifully helping us organize the retreat in Phoenix that we had. You were, and all the beautiful photos and everything that you did. So I'm really, really grateful for that. And also I remember when personally, on a personal note, we communicated so much during Pancho's, the whole story of being in custody. And I was just wondering if you have something to share from that time. And I think of Pancho as a as an amazing example of a peaceful activist. And just anything you want to share from that experience and something you learned from him or what inspired you. I was just wondering if you had a nice story about that.
Yeah, well, so I met Pancho here in Arizona in 2010. He was here helping us doing door-to-door campaigning and talking to folks about what was going on with SB 1070. And it was interesting because just the day before he got arrested in Phoenix with SB 1070, my academic advisor was protesting with me, and she made the comment that she was so proud of me for the emotional distance and for the very, like, scientific studier approach I brought to protests. Because we were in the field that day, and over 100 people were being arrested, and she's like, you have this calm, cool, like, removed exterior, and it's so great in this space. And then the next day, I got up, and I dropped Pancho off at the jail for an action, and I had to go into my office for a couple hours. And I started getting this really bad feeling, and I couldn't tell what was going on. And then I started getting messages that I needed to get to the jail immediately. And I get to the jail and find out that Pancho had been arrested along with 10 others in preventing the sheriff from doing, basically doing a raid on a migrant community. And Pancho had just shared with me the night before that he himself was undocumented. And I was the only person in the Phoenix activist community who knew at that time. So I also knew that his arrest by Arpaio, Sheriff Arpaio, who is our notorious sheriff here in Maricopa County, I knew that this meant a lot of things and that there was a very real danger that he would be deported and back in Mexico within 24 hours. And suddenly it wasn't this distant thing. It was incredibly personal. It was one of my best friends. It was someone who I had just seen a few hours before. It was somebody who had, you know, I'd woken up within my house that morning. And it opened up for me this entire emotional journey of what so many families and loved ones go through here. You know, that one minute someone's with you and is a part of your community and right next to you, and the next moment they could be gone, and you have very little power and control over what's happening. I mean, and luckily it all turned out in a good way, but that was a big catalyst. I mean, I basically, after Pancho left Phoenix the next day, I spent almost a full day just laying on my floor staring at the ceiling because I was so overwhelmed by the emotions and by the things that I went through in that experience. And I called a very dear friend of mine, Ramon, who's an activist, and I was like, Ramon, what am I going through? What is this? Like, I'm freaking out. And he just laughed, and he's like, this is what it is to be a Chicana. He's like, welcome to the other side. Like, this is, he's like, you know, this is taking your white privilege down a notch and helping you understand, like, what the other side looks like. And I remember for a moment I said to him, I was like, can I have my white privilege back, please? Like, I don't know that I want to see this. But, you know, once you see it, there's no turning back. So... but yeah, so then Pancho's been has been a light in my life and helped me see at that point in my activism and in my journey here that there was an alternative and there was another way to think and move in these circles. And so I think he really helped kind of launch that exploration in myself.
And I think we have Prakash.
Yeah, Prakash tuning in from Heart of the Bay. Birju and Melissa, thank you so much for gifting this wonderful conversation. I resonate so deeply, Melissa, with your the journey in the area of permaculture and Gandhian way of natural farming, mm-hmm. yoga, community garden, and so on. The simile that you drew upon the anger and the fever brought up something that I wanted to share from my own experimentations and deeper yearning along the way of, you know, the way Dr. V puts it, constantly tuning this instrument, this gift of body, to tune it to become a perfect instrument. The simile of fever and the study around it led me to this idea of how unbelievable this body, starting from, you know, very simple things like sneezing to blow away the external things that could compromise your balance, and then doing some sort of a water-based cleanse when we get cold, and then our body would go on to, you know, doing some more deeper things like, you know, sweat and other things. And then, as you beautifully pointed out, the fever, this idea of fever is so natural phenomenon to do this deep sacred fire ceremony for burning away the things that would block this body to become a perfect instrument. And so on goes the story of how this innate ability of the body helps us to stay balanced and stay in harmony with the nature. This morning, as all of you were sharing, I was listening to all of you being in the lotus position and concluding my personal practice. So I wanted to offer the merits of that practice to the circle, and also a quick personal story from Melissa. Dr. Shailesh Rao, who's a dear friend and author of this book, Carbon Dharma, who's like a mentor figure for us. Whenever he's up here in the Bay Area, he joins our yoga circle, and he was sharing your the Awaken Circle, and we didn't know about the Awaken Circle in Phoenix, and that really brought up a lot of joy. I wanted to share that. I really do not have a question as such, but I just wanted to be the mirror and reflect all the beautiful things that you are sharing, and I wish you all the best, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to hear. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you know Shailesh, and yeah, he always joins our circle when he's here. It's so wonderful.
Excellent.
Yeah, and Prakash also hosts yoga at home, and he's a yoga practitioner as well, so wonderful.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
This is Pancho calling from the part of mine we call Oakland. I just tuned in a few minutes ago, and you know, on Tuesdays we have meetings here in the Canical Farm. So as soon as the meeting was going, I said, "Well, we're gonna just check in with the love warrior of the desert."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, I guess that most has been shared so far about. I hope so, and I will be looking forward to listen to that in terms of your skills and passion and love for the land, not only for putting your heart for people in the community and how you dearly care about your friends and family, but also the plants. I was so inspired to see, you know, how you have your little garden there and plants. And I don't know if you can hear it. Can you hear the drumming now? I'm getting distracted here. but also, just to share a little bit, the day we were trying to meet the mom, the biological mom of Birju and I for a while, and that didn't happen. And it was that day when we met during the nonviolent training. That, oh, it's like, is anybody going to, you know, to that place that was, what is it, Stempi?
Stempi.
Yeah, and then it was dark. I'm going there. I can give you a ride. And then was supposed just to give me a ride there. And then we, lo and behold, we get there, and the mom of Virgil is such a beautiful being and treat us as her own children. And then you were just supposed to drop me there, and you end up there, you know, staying with us for 3 hours or something, speaking with her, eating these like handmade chapatis and these delicious food. And so I think that's just kind of the feeling of how easy it is just to connect with you at the cellular level. And I've seen now how, you know, that's growing more, and just want to put that seed, just in case it wasn't shared before, that, you know, you facilitated that encounter with another of the moms of the service space ecosystem that has even so much light, you know, like bringing Virgil to this world, and you were connecting there. And then since then, I've seen also how you all are connecting through the permaculture. And I've been multiple times been tagged with these seeds coming from, I don't know where, but I have a hunch that it's from that part of the planet, with smugglers and seeds from pumpkins and tomatoes. And so you will be very happy because we're learning from you too, that we have our three sisters thriving, the corn, beans, and squash going strong here in the back. You just want to share that and be grateful that we're learning. If you could do that in the desert, we can do it here in the Bay Area for sure.
Absolutely.
So nice to hear your voice, Pancho. Do you know Virgil is also on the call? So it's interesting that he shared his story. He's moderating today. So.
Hermano. Looking forward to giving you a hug soon.
Yeah, I'm glad that I joined the love party here, just a little bit.
Absolutely. And a great memory to be sharing, and it just brings up this question in me, Melissa, as Pancho is talking about the community that you've been building, not just locally, but virtually. It extends quite far and wide, and certainly this community that's listening today is a representative sample of that. How can this audience be of service to you in your journey and what you're trying to create in your local community?
You know, I think that's something of, I think to be of service, like the first thing is for, you know, each person to take the time for reflection for themselves. And, I mean, grow something. Even if you think, I always like to say it takes a lot of black fingers to create green thumbs. So even if you think you're going to kill a lot of things in plant world. It's all an experiment. So just make the attempt when it comes to the gardening. But I also think very much from the social justice side and from the question of activism, open your eyes when you walk through your day. You don't necessarily have to go to a march. You don't necessarily have to go sign a petition. But so much to just open your eyes, especially to those who we typically don't see. I think of all of the homeless men and women that I pass every single day on my commute to work, and how, you know, I don't always have a dollar or a granola bar, but I at least have a smile, and I can at least look in them in their eyes and recognize that I see them, because so often we just ignore and walk past. I think that it's something of if you see someone belittling someone who is a part of your community, I mean, it's something here that if I'm in a group of people and they're using the term illegal immigrant, I'm going to stop and say, you know, I think it needs to be, you know, you can say undocumented, you can say migrants. Like, there are so many other ways of changing our language so that we remember inclusion and so that we are not othering and belittling people. And so I think that that's just when you start making some of those minor adjustments, and sometimes it's a big deal. to say to a group of people who are discussing one thing, and you don't have to get angry about it. I mean, that's for me, so much of it is. I know if I get angry and if I bring this negative energy to it, no one's going to hear me, because they're just going to be able to say, oh, she's one of those, like, dirty hippies. She believes X, Y, Z things. Versus if you can stay open and stay from a very heart-centered space, and you know, just very compassionately, you know, well, I feel like there is another way of seeing this. And that way, it's for me, a lot of times, it's not about changing someone's mind, it's about just being able to open the space for dialogue. So that's the thing, you know, in your community, in your neighbors, in your house, how can you open the space for dialogue? Because it's through that communication, I think, that we'll see a lot more change, both with ourselves and then with our greater communities.
Thank you for that reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Melissa. I think Michelle has a question.
Sure.
Yeah. Hi, this is Michelle Ailes calling from Santa Fe. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experiences today. It's been very meaningful to me. And I noticed that you have some background with people from various different places on the planet, as well as different spiritual traditions.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear more about how that has impacted you and what you see now in your life.
Well, you know, growing up with 12 exchange students from from Asia, Eastern Europe, South America, you know, one of the things I often joke with now is that I sometimes feel more comfortable with folks who speak English as a second language than as a first one, because I grew up spending so much of my life just learning how to communicate with someone who doesn't necessarily fully speak the language I do. And I also noticed that I tended to, especially with my sisters who are adopted from Bulgaria, that I started picking up habits that weren't necessarily quote-unquote U.S. American habits. And so it gave me this feeling of not always entirely belonging to this place where I am, and gave me, I think, a feeling of what it is to kind of be a little, to feel outside of the community and inside the community at the same time. So I have a lot of compassion for not always feeling like this is the place I'm supposed to be. You know, having to create home wherever you are, because home, I didn't have this deeply connected idea of home with, like, the town I grew up in or the state I grew up in. And so I think there's a lot to be learned from that acceptance of diversity. Most of the years of my childhood, there was another person coming in to live with our house, and my parents would always introduce them as my sister. You know, this is your sister from Brazil. This is your sister from Slovakia, because they wanted to emphasize the fact that we're family. And my dad was like, you know, a fish and a guest smells after 3 days. We can't have a person living with us as a guest for a year. They have to be family. Whether you like them or not, don't like them, they're family, and they're here, and we're going to function together. And so I think that taught me a lot about how to start navigating with people, that you can't necessarily, I don't disagree with you, or I don't agree with you today, so I'm just going to get rid of you. No, we're family. We have to work it out somehow. We have to figure out how to do this. And I think that where it also really changed me was in what I consider family. For me, family has very little to do with who I'm actually, like, genetically related to. I come from a huge family, and I actually don't really know all of my cousins and things very well, because we kind of grew up away from them. But I have so many amazing people in my life that I consider to be my family, or even friends of my parents. From their graduate school days, that they raised me with their children, and those children are more like my cousins than some of my actual cousins, I feel like, because I have closer ties to them. So it's, I always look at, how do we create family? How do you just create a space for accepting one another and for having the room for the fact that you're not always going to get along? And how do you heal that and get to the next step in your relationship? So yeah, I mean, that's where I find that those things really impacted me, and I see them coming to fruition more and more as I am an adult.
Thank you. As a fellow global citizen growing up all over the world with many adopted, officially and unofficially, people from different cultures, I relate completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of a funny thing. I find that it's isolating sometimes from my U.S. American peers because they don't necessarily understand that. I think it's easier if you meet people necessarily from, like, Europe because, you know, for them, a country is like a state to us. And so there is that different place of trying to figure out how to explain that global perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Melissa. I'm going to hand it over to maybe Biju, if you want to, if you have a closing question or thoughts, and Pancho, if you want to say something, and then we can close the call.
Thank you, Kanchan. I'm happy to defer to Pancho as well, but I just quickly wanted to say, Melissa, as I reflected on your shares today, there's a lot that sticks out to me. You made the comment about the importance of the subtle and taking time for silence as a key driver into the subtle. This idea of family and how the community becomes your family as you live into that I'm going to keep with me as we spend the rest of the day here. Fever as an analogy for anger. I love that. And generally, I just get the sense, and I am inspired by your path of living a new story, even when the dominant paradigm that you're in does not reinforce that thinking. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. Panchito.
Well, one of the things that really had an impact in my soul and in my heart, and that's how we all become family, right? Once we know each other and be in the presence of each other, then we carry a piece of each one of us for the rest of our lives. And just remembering that, paying attention to those details, as Virgil was saying, how being in the desert and appreciating those little signs of life. You know, if you live in the rest in the desert, you really appreciate a drop of water. You really appreciate that little tiny green leaf coming up. You really appreciate having a little being in those extreme weather. And so in the same token, seeing all this structural violence manifested there and seeing all these little what that permeates everywhere, these signs of love that got in that. And so I've been learning that from all you people that live in the desert, how to appreciate, to look at those small details of kindness and courage and generosity that the desert shows us so well, for those little details of signs of life.
Thank you, Pancho.
Grateful and in love with all of you, the love warriors of the desert, I send you all my love from here, and hoping to hugging you soon. Love you all.
Thank you.